All right then, what number am I talking about?
69, dude!
That's right, welcome back to episode number 69 of the Lethal Mullet Podcast live on Facebook. On at the Lethal Mullet on Facebook page for FBN. Here's your host, Adam O'Brien. G'day, my name again. Well, tonight we're going to be chatting about Free Jack. One of the greats of the old 90s, it's a sci-fi film made from the makers of Young Guns, starring Billy the Kid himself, El Chivato, Billy the Kid himself, Emilio Estevez, along with Rene Russo, and of course, Anthony Hopkins, and of course, Mick Jagger. That's right, Mick Jagger. Alright, let's go.
Welcome to Phantom Podcast Network. This is Lethal Mullet Podcast, a celebration of 1980s action cinema. Celebrating the heroes of yesterday, Schwarzenegger, Stallone, Bruce Willis, Van Damme, all the way down to, of course, the big great action films that we all enjoyed on VHS, and of course, Betamax, with the loves of American Ninja, all the way through to Cyborg Cop and beyond. Here, at Phantom Podcast Network's Lethal Mullet Podcast, join Adam O'Brien as we celebrate action movie cinema.
All right, so welcome to the show, folks. Episode number 69 of the show here. Special live episode looking at Free Jack, Emilio Estevez's film, which was basically his little stab at doing a science fiction film. And it is an interesting film, what it is. It's fun. It came out at a time where a lot of action stars were doing that sort of thing with Judge Dredd, with Stallone, and Demolition Man. We had a lot of ones, Keanu Reeves doing a couple of different ones before The Matrix as well. And there's others that sort of dabbled into, you know, not huge budget science fiction films, but ones that were still at the time a moderate budget, which are quite big for what they are. I'm your host tonight, Adam O'Brien, and we're going to be looking at that film and giving a bit of an update on what's upcoming on our guest shows, which are coming up very, very soon. But before we get into that, let's let you know how you can catch this podcast and, of course, all the others on the Phantom Podcast Network.
The number you have dialed has been changed. The new number is...
G'day, my name is Gowan. Follow the Lethal Mullet here on Phantom Podcast Network's master channel at fbnet.podbean.com or subscribe on the Podbean app, where you can find all the shows. Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast. Culture Clash, a weekly look at pop culture. You look at Making Treks, a Star Trek fan podcast. You can also check out The Mullet Guild, a look at the Dune universe from me, the Lethal Mullet. You can also check out this show and all the others, like What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast. Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast. Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, and much, much more. All on FPN. You can follow on Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and all podcatchers. Make sure you follow me, The Lethal Mullet, at The Lethal Mullet on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.
To catch this show, you need to jump onto Podbean and check out us under the Phantom Podcast Network umbrella of shows, which you can find there. Podbean, you can grab the app off Apple App Store, or you could go onto, of course, Google Play, check it out there as well. And it's great because there's a whole host of different shows, from Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast, hosted by That's So Man, Kevin Reitzel. He's going to kill me for doing that. Also, Kyle Wagner, of course, they're the two co-founders of this great channel. And of course, it's a Highlander podcast looking at the movies, the TV show in particular, and all the other merchandise. We've also got on there, look at the world of culture, Culture Clash, looking at pop culture and stuff like that weekly with Kevin and Kyle, called Culture Clash. We also have, of course, Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast, which looks at, of course, Star Wars and Mandalorian, all that sort of stuff there too. We also have the Mullet Guild, a Dune podcast, which is really interesting now that we've got the trailer out. We're looking at some of that stuff. Episode number 8 just went out last Thursday. Looking at that, of course, with Kyle on there as a guest, and of course the co-host of What a Piece of Junk, Star Wars podcast on there as well. And it was great. It was nailed just to the point that we needed for that as well. What's great too is that when we've got these things down there to talk about when it comes to the trailers and stuff like that, we're getting guests on there that really know what they're talking about, really know what is happening. Particularly when it comes to Kyle. Kyle really has a feel of Dune from coming from the movie side of the computer game sort of side of it too. And great to have Scott Bowman on there from What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast. His take on it too is interesting because he's done the collectible card game as well, which not a lot of people, I suppose, have seen a lot of now because it's so rare, hard to find, and expensive to find those cards, folks, when it's on eBay and vice versa. So go check that out. And we'll have those guys on a lot more of those shows too, now that June is hotting up, of course, to December. We also have on there too, Making Treks, a Star Trek fan podcast, with myself and Mark Newbold of Fanta Treks as well. And we also have, of course, on there, the Union Federation one with Kevin and Kyle and a host of others that look at, of course, the newer Star Trek in particular, the Orville, and of course, Discovery, all that sort of stuff too, if you're into that sort of stuff. So, of course, Leela Mullet on there. You can catch me on at the Leela Mullet on this page. You can also catch it on Twitter and Instagram as well, where we put some funny stuff up there, little articles from time to time, and even just stuff I find out in the world. One of those, which, thanks to the last episode, Vern's Steven Seagal Seagology. Seagology. I still can't say it right. Is a great read, and I actually now have the next book in that, which is, of course, Yippee-Ki-Yay, Moviegoer. I'm about to say the other M word there for a second, but these are great because Vern, who wrote these, he's a reviewer from Ain't It Cool, has really gone to town when it comes to what you know, you're going to enjoy about the films, from everything from, of course, the 90s run, Above the Law, we talked about in the last episode. I have on the next episode looking at Hard to Kill and Mark for Death. In particular, with Lee Fillingsness, of course, of Blood of Kings, the co-host of that. He is somebody that's also an Aikido stylist. I am also. Both studied under the same style, Ki Society. And so we're going to bring some of our knowledge of Aikido to, of course, looking at Seagal's films. And, of course, thanks to the amazing knowledge that Vern has given us from the movie side of it too, which is really, really interesting too. Again, huge book. It's a great little paperback. If you haven't read it, read it, check it out. For Australians, you're not going to find it in the bookstores. You're going to have to get this on Amazon. So go and check it out. All right. So, of course, as we mentioned, we're going to be looking at Hard to Kill in the next couple of weeks. Hard to Kill, of course, is probably, out of that early run, one of the more interesting films, because, of course, it deals with a little bit of, in some cases, Man Out of Time sort of sequence, where we have Seagal's character, Mason Storm, supposedly get killed, but he's in a coma for 6-7 years. Kind of like a little bit like Kill Bill, isn't it? A little bit. Where a character goes into a coma, comes back, and seeks revenge. And, of course, he's not mucking around. And he's after, you know, Senator that has basically been the dirty dealings that has led to his character and his family getting dealt the harsh penalty that they did. So it's a great film, some great stars in it as well. And of course, there's a little bit different style of looking at martial arts. There's a little bit more of a Chinese influence in herbology and stuff like that too there. It's not straight up Japanese style martial arts, even though it technically is. great film. We're going to look at that. Of course, Mark for Death, probably the best of that run. We're going to be looking at that as well. It's a little bit different because it's not just Seagal stuck in LA or Seagal in Chicago, like in Above the Law. He actually has to go from where he is to, of course, Jamaica because, of course, this is a film that deals with Jamaican drug lords and how their syndicates sort of deal with different parts of the mafia, one part of the world or another. And it's interesting too to see that interplay. And of course, there's a really interesting twist in that film too when it comes to the bad guy, the villain. Again, great. And we get to see a little bit of different martial arts in this one too. The Aikido is probably the best and strongest in that one too, particularly to do with a lot of the work when it comes to the joint locks, throws as well, which we're going to get a bit more technical on that episode too. And again, you get to see a bit of swordplay in that one too. And of course, we see Danny Trejo in that one. Keith David as well. He actually went back and did another film with Seagal only a few years ago as well. So it's interesting to sort of see those characters coming back. And he's actually had quite a few that will do a couple of movies and then come back and work with him later as well. So we're going to be looking at that, and eventually Under Siege. And we're trying to get Kevin and Kyle in those episodes and looking at a little bit of what made that one probably the film that obviously launched his career to that new height, to be becoming an A-lister, you know, and leading films at a time when, of course, we had Schwarzenegger, we had Stallone, Bruce Willis, you know, at their height, Planet Hollywood, all that sort of stuff too. And then, of course, Jean-Claude Van Damme, Dolph Lundgren, all those other ones were starting to kick up and getting into those higher points. So interesting time. We'll go into a lot of that a little bit later in the next couple months. We're also doing a trilogy of Bruce Willis ones too. Now, you already know your diehards. I know you all do out there. You know your diehards. We're going to look at films apart from Hudson Hawk, because we've already covered that on here, even though there's a lot of people that don't like that movie. I don't know how they can't like that movie. It's a great movie. But we're going to be looking at some of the other ones, Last Boy Scout in particular. We may even look at Mercury Rising and perhaps something a little bit newer as well, maybe Red here on the show too. They're great. They're all great for what they are too. So we're getting those a little bit later. Also, coming up on the show, we've got to look at Brotherhood of the Wolf with Lee Fillingsness. Now, Mark Dacascos, we're a huge fan of out here, and of course, Christoph Gans as well as a filmmaker, and we can't wait to really delve into what makes that film an epic. Now, to set the scene for this one, Brotherhood of the Wolf came out in, I think it was 2003 here in Australia, or late 2002, and it went straight to digital cinemas out here, not to the run-of-the-mill cinemas. So we had to go to a real art house cinema in Brisbane to see it. And, you know, it was immaculate at the time, beautiful, huge recliner seating and stuff like that. And, of course, I had a full lunch and a nice cold lager when I watched this film for the first time. I sat down, and, of course, if anyone that's seen the film knows what I'm talking about. When we're talking about the opening scene of Le Parc des Loups, French name, of course, of the Brotherhood of the Wolf. And, of course, it's set in Gévaudan with these beautiful rollicking hills, cliff faces on the sides, where we see a farm area where there's a sheep or something like that, where a lady's trying to get away from some monster at the time. So it's obviously there's a bit of horror involved in it. And without really going into it, because I don't want to spoil it for those that haven't seen it, it is one of the most freakiest, scariest little scenes you're ever going to see, particularly if you've just had your lunch. And luckily, I had a light lunch, not a big one. So, yes, I almost lost my lunch watching the start of that film. But after that, we get one of the greatest, let's just say, period piece martial arts action cinema scenes set in France. And it is amazing. Again, it is bringing, I think it's Samuel Le Bihan, I think his name is, the other actor in it. But it's him and, of course, Mark Dacascos playing Money, who come in, it's Fronzac the Knight and his native Canadian tracker friend, Money, who basically are set out to come here to Gévaudan to find out what is this beast. And of course, as a naturalist, he's going to bring it back for the King of France. And it is amazing to see what these guys do. And of course, there's been, you know, it being a period piece, bringing in a little bit of that kung fu sort of style at the time, which is popular with Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon and other films. There's a little bit of wire work, it's minimal. But a lot of it is just so tightly choreographed, well choreographed, with a legend of Hong Kong action cinema behind the choreography. It really, really tightly works. Now, there's also some great work with a little bit more, less of the kung fu influence, more of a Braveheart influence halfway through. Obviously, those that know it, there's a character that passes away, and then the spirit of that goes into the hero, which we'll talk about on that show, and it's just breathtaking. It's rough. It's tough. There's no getting around it. These scenes are some of the toughest out there when it comes to what action you can take place. But when he's seeking revenge, there's no holding back Fronzac the Knight. Put it that way. Which we'll talk about then. All right. So let's get into it, folks. We're going into, of course, the bar here at Cantina. All righty, mate. Time to go down to the pub for a pint, chat, action movies and more. Here on the Lethal Mullet Podcast. Here we go. All right, so 1992, science fiction had a new name, and it was, of course, Free Jack. Now, let's set the scene. Back here, when Free Jack came out, it went to cinemas, did okay. It was a bigger hit on VHS, which, of course, VHS for us in the 90s was all stretches of the world, all passes. It was always the way to see a film. Kickback, recliner at the time, of course, and enjoy a film that you could rewind, watch again. But this film, of course, starred Emilio Estevez, a little bit after, of course, I think it was Young Guns 2 at the time that came out, or just about to. And, of course, we've got Mick Jagger in it, Rene Russo, Anthony Hopkins, and Special Agent Johnson of Die Hard is in this one too, which we'll talk about soon, about that. Based on a screenplay by Stephen Pressfield, Ronald Shusett, and Dan Gilroy. This is a story that it's interesting. Again, it's one of those ones, it's a man out of time. Now, we know it's worked with a Marvel with, of course, Captain America, you know, being in a stasis, you know, in ice, on the rocks, and he wakes up many years later. And, of course, it's, you know, catching up with technology, what the world is, where it's been, all that sort of thing. How do you catch up to that point? And that's interesting for storytellers. Anyone that's in that knows that that's one of the ways to really just comedic beats or even just, somebody learning the technology itself. It's set up to be funny. And in this one, it is. Now, Emilio plays Alex Furlong. We're at a time when, of course, Terminator's been out. And when I heard Furlong, straight away, they've got to have taken that name from, of course, the actor that played John Connor. From, of course, Terminator 2, Judgment Day. Once I heard that, I'm like, come on. I mean, you obviously have taken that as, you know, it was the biggest science fiction film at that time of the 90s was, of course, Terminator 2, Judgment Day. It still is a great film to this day. So it's interesting. Now, the plot of this film goes back to 2009, where basically rich people were getting together to try and beat death. And we're talking about, of course, the ultimate thing is people want to live forever, right? In this case, they're hiring these bone jackers or mercenaries equipped with basically time travel gear to go back in time and take a body that basically they know this person is going to die at a certain time, take them at that moment of death, all right? So it's basically, you know, if you knew somebody was dying, in this case, a car accident and a race where Furlong, the character, dies. And spirit them into the future where they can use that person's core to basically meld the person into that is either passing away in the future, vice versa. There's kind of a looper angle to this, and you think about the time travel. It's interesting. So that's the big science fiction crutch. It's taking somebody from the past that has died. They know the moment of death, they can take that body just before they died, basically hijack the body, and the person that's old, and to a point where they are probably dying in the future, they can get a new lease of life in a new body. Again, okay, so it's basically like a computer system. That computer needs new hardware, right? So you're basically taking what you had and putting it in a new computer. In this case, you're taking the soul of the person, putting it in a new hard piece of hardware, human body. It's a computer, it's a machine. So now that's an interesting idea, you know, right up there with, of course, Phil K. Dick's great stuff when it comes to that sort of stuff. This is an interesting take. And I think, you know, the escapees that come from this, that do get away from this in the future, are called Free Jacks. So that's where we get the name of the actual film from. So basically, Alex Furlong in this, Emilio Estevez is Formula One racer, and there's a great scene at the start where we get to see him as a racer getting out there in amongst it. And of course, the people that are going through really figure out what is happening when it comes to that. So that's what's interesting about the story, is that we see they know exactly when he's going to die in this race, when he's going to have an accident and how it's going to go. So in that time, we see Rene Russo, his wife at the time, or wife-to-be, and she is at that moment. So it's great to have characters like this in the past that they're going to react with later in that film. So we'll talk about that very soon. So it is based on Immortality Incorporated by Robert Sheckley. So let's have a look at this. Yeah. again, this is at a time where they would take a core of an idea or a book and just extrapolate. Philip K. Dick's ones are the great ones when it comes to that, because they would take an idea and then, boom, Total Recall. Let's take an idea and then Paycheck. All these times when we had a lot of his work, it'd be like, let's just take the core, the essence of an idea, and then Blade Runner. Probably the best proponent of those as well. So Immortality Incorporated is a 1959 book by Robert Sheckley, and it's about a fictional process where human's consciousness is transferred into brain-dead body. So obviously, I think that's the big thing that they portray well in this, but the fact that they may get Furlong a little bit too early. So they basically would have had to kill him off. A strange concept in the novel, as it's basically, it's the idea of random killings of strangers by people who intend to die at that time, but then take their body and, again, like we say, use the body's machine for another consciousness. Again, I don't know that it's that well thought out for this film, but it's great for what it is. It's really well played. All right, we're going to jump to the cast here. So we got Emilia, we've talked about. Hot on the success of obviously playing. We had Men at Work with Charlie Sheen and Keith David in that one too, folks, by the way. Great film and one of those great classic comedies, which you've just got to go and check out if you haven't seen it. Particularly, it's one of those ones that's, you know, it's two guys that basically start on a track where they're doing really well and then just take a detour, and that detour is the movie. Mick Jagger is Victor Vasendik. What a name. That is such a movie name. Victor Vasendik. And of course, you know, they really play on that later in the film when, of course, they're chasing Furlong, and Furlong gets the upper hand finally. Renee Russo is Julie Redland, and she's great in this too. Particularly with Emilio, there's a real chemistry between those two. You know, you kind of wonder whether something may happen on the set, eh? Anthony Hopkins plays Ian McCandless in this, and he's great in this. You know, he's always been charismatic and fun. And of course, the twists with him in this are really, really well played. Whether that's that good towards the end with the sort of the ending that they do go for, who knows. Anyway, of course, Jonathan Banks is Mark Michelet. And then, of course, Grandel Bush as Boone. Now, Grandel Bush, obviously, of Die Hard, Lethal Weapon, you name the movies, he's been in almost all the great action movies at that time. But often forgot as Balrog, of course, in Street Fighter 2. Or Street Fighter. They should have made a second one. They can call them that, the Street Fighter 2. And he's great in this. You know, he sort of plays Julie Redland's bodyguard. Then we've got David Johansen as Brad. Amanda Plummer as the nun in this. And she's really good in this because she's, again, got a very small part. But it's really, really well played out. Frankie Faison plays Eagle Man. And this is an interesting one. Frankie Faison's role as Eel Man's really good because it is a time where Alex is trying to figure out where his mind's at, where he is in the film, which we'll talk about too. John Shea as Morgan, Izzo Morales as Ripper, and of course, Izzo Morales, fantastic actor. He plays in this Vasendik's right-hand man, but also, you know, again, he just kept turning up in these great roles over the years, which, you know, I remember him. And, of course, then led into working on the Battlestar series as well. Fantastic actor. And then Jerry Hall, who was going out and, I think, married at the time to Mick Jagger, plays one of the newswomen in two. Now, it's interesting because Julie Redland originally was meant to be played by Linda Fiorentino. So that's I still think Renee Russo is a better choice. And again, it's one of those things, scheduling, all that sort of come into it too. All right, so with that, that's the cast, folks. So again, really rich cast, great one. And directed by Jeff Murphy. Let's have a look at Jeff Murphy, for instance, what he was involved in. And of course, done a lot. He was somebody who had obviously done quite a bit of work in the everywhere. He's a New Zealand filmmaker, for starters. His second feature was Goodbye Pork Pie. And of course, he's also worked on the as a second unit director on the Lord of the Rings trilogy as well. But, of course, we're going free, Jack. I mean, he's really, really good in this one in particular. He's also worked on Under Siege 2, Dark Territory, which we'll be covering in a few weeks' time here on our one of our episodes. And, of course, he worked on Young Guns 2. So that's obviously where they got the idea of using him from that. And, of course, Young Guns 2 is great. It's one of those great films which, you know, sometimes sequels are good but not as good as the original, or they meet them right on par. And in some ways, that's a far better film than the original Young Guns. Young Guns feels self-contained enough, but it's the fun of the second one. The second one felt like a rock concert when it came to how it was portrayed. And we will be covering them very soon here, towards the end of the year. And, you know, he, again, I think did a fantastic job on this one. It really works. It feels, in some ways, like a Western. Great for what it was. So Roald Schusett, obviously, is one of the big names behind this one, turning this into the story that it is. You've probably heard of Roald Schusett before. He's obviously a producer, writer, that's worked on a lot of films, particularly with Dan O'Bannon with Alien. And, of course, Alien vs. Predator. And also, of course, Total Recall. He's one of the names behind getting that out there too. So just to give you an idea, obviously Minority Report, Total Recall, the 2012 one as well for the story of itself. King Kong Lives, Phobia, and The Final Terror as well. And, believe it or not, worked with Andrew Davis on Above the Law. There you go, folks. Bet you didn't know that one. There you go. All right. So, again, let's get back to this film. So, I actually saw this film first in high school, believe it or not. We had a class where it was split between two afternoons where we had, there's almost like a recess class. And you could basically do your studies, or the teacher gave us an opportunity to watch the VHS of Free Jack. And so we put all our books and stuff aside and we watched Free Jack. So split over 2 days. So we watched part of it the first day and part of the next. And I still remember this day just wanting to stay at school and watch the end of Free Jack. Because I think we got up to the part with the Eagle Man. And then it sort of just, all right, the bell came and we had to go home. We had to catch the bus home. But then we watched the rest of it, I think, from the same point. So we still, you know, we're at that point where we're still going at that point. But again, we were right into it. But after I'd seen that, I wanted to see it again. And so I rented it out myself and really got into it and really, really enjoyed it. The film itself is solidly produced. It looks great, feels great. It doesn't feel like a little studio movie. It lays in, you know, done on the back lot. This feels like it's been out there. I mean, a lot of the look of this sort of future part with McCandless and all that, they really pull back and you see the city. You see what it is itself. And, of course, how the McCandless Corporation tend to have their fingers in just about every pie when it comes to the future itself too. So, of course, we're talking about New York City. That's where it's basically set in that. And it's got a dystopia around it, which we get to see that everything's starting to fall apart outside of the core of the city itself. And, of course, part of that is that, you know, we've got people at mercenaries like Vesendek and his little group going around and hunting down people that are Free Jacks. Obviously something that's happened where people wake up in that part where they're shot through to the future before they die. And it looks like that's what sort of dragged them out through it. So we have quite a few run-ins where Furlong first gets there. He starts to see some of his, let's just say, earlier acquaintances from earlier in his days. And I think that's one of the interesting parts that we get to see in this, because when he first goes to the future, you know, he tries to catch up with Julie Redlin. Of course, she doesn't believe it's him. You know, she believes that Furlong died. And so the play on the heartstrings of, you know, this couple, where they get back together, you know, this is the love of the life's come back into her life. And, you know, this is so many years later. And that's what makes it so interesting. And, of course, you know, the sending himself, sort of becoming, you know, the person that's going to be hunting him down all through the film. You know, unemotionally, you know, he's a professional. And that's one of the parts that really grows into, particularly you get to see that even though he's professional and he's running off those, you know, those cylinders that you do when you're a professional mercenary. In some ways, he's kind of like the Boba Fett of the film. Yeah, he's badass, but he's tough as well. And basically, Mark Michelet, who's now running McCandless' position as he's obviously in his deathbed, you know, and he's basically running it through virtual systems, if you like. And you only see McCandless himself, that's Anthony Hopkins, chatting to Julie or Michelet through these little vid screens that pop up and go, "Hi, Julie, I'm in Sydney, I'm at the opera," you know, all those sorts of scenes. And it's sort of great to see that sort of parts come out too. And of course, you know, Furlong, as he goes through, the first thing he does is tries to track down Julie, of course. And of course, she doesn't believe him, sends McCandless's troops after him. And of course, basically, the only way he can get out is, you know, to hide out and go out to see the other parts of the city that are just falling to pieces. So what goes in place, he gets to see his former acquaintances right through to the point where he knows he's going to have to face McCandless himself. And the great parts are, as Mick Jagger gets to know Emilio's character, Furlong, and there's a great rapport. They're actually really good together, particularly towards the end, as you get to know the twist of the film and how the Sendix kind of like, you know, these guys are good. The fact that he can probably use Furlong to take over and actually do something better for the people. Of course, that's part of the twist. The fact that, particularly at the end, when we get to see he's captured by Vicendic, put on the machine, of this machine that's basically going to turn McCandless into Furlong. The essence of his body is going to go into Alex's body. But the big twist is that we actually think it happens. But at the end of it, what we get to see is the fact that McCandless can't drive. So you actually get to see Furlong at the wheels of the car, about to drive. And of course, then he goes, "Nibble my ear," to Julie. And that's the great thing, where she finally realizes that it didn't work and that Alex is still alive. So it's a great, for what it is, I mean, it's a quick film. It's 110 minutes. And for, you know, a $30 million budget, not bad when it comes to getting all that out there. Now, it wasn't a huge success. It only made $17 million back, so it wasn't something to write home about. They lost money on it, obviously. You know, it didn't make the money it did. And it got a lot of negative reviews. A lot of people are sort of looking at it the wrong way. If we look at Rotten Tomatoes, not that we want to because it's rotten. Rotten Tomatoes gave it 18% approval rating. Well, that's what I say to Rotten Tomatoes. What I will say is this. Yes, you can see that there's parts of it that don't quite gel as well, and the ending isn't strong. It's a movie, again, it feels like a Spielberg film where it's got a great start, great middle, but they just don't know how to wrap it up. That's basically Spielberg films of the last 20 years are like that. But, of course, you know, Anthony Hopkins, perfect example here, says that the film is terrible. You know? Here's a bit of trivia for you. Brad Pitt's character in True Romance is actually watching Free Jack on television. There you go. I bet you didn't know that. And, of course, it does feel a little bit like it's a stereotypical science fiction film in parts. But to me, I actually think that's part of the heart and soul of this film. That's why it's fun. And it plays to the strengths of Emilio, and it's kind of even some of the hats that he wears, and it sort of echo Billy the Kid. It's kind of like a bit of a nod to his character, Billy the Kid, William H. Bonney, in, of course, Young Guns. But again, it's as it's described in one of the bits of trivia here, that it's thought of by Entertainment Weekly's Owen Gleiberman as a mishmash of Blade Runner, Robocop, and Total Recall, like a cheap version of those. And yeah, it could be. For $30 million, it's probably heading that way. But it's a film, to me, that is that fast-paced, that fun, and got that sort of a little bit of fun to it, particularly the humour, that really makes it a heart and soul of the 90s, early 90s in particular. But, okay, folks, we have to give it a rating ourselves here. And that's, of course, the Joe Hallenbach scale out of 5, the finger scale. And I'm going to give it a 3. That's it. Let's get in the 3. All right. But I want to know what you guys think of it. Let us know in the comments below what you think of Free Jack. Was it a great film when it came out? Have you watched it again recently and enjoyed it as what it was? For me, I think actually it plays pretty damn well. Again, it's played at a time where obviously the 90s, the culture of the 90s was all there. It was part of what made it fun. But I think now, looking back on it, you know, this is a film that's, what is it now, more than 30 years ago. Maybe some of that pop culture in the film and stuff like that doesn't play as well. But, I mean, Mick Jagger still looks like Mick Jagger. So, anyway, I hope you enjoyed that, folks. A quick look at Free Jack. And definitely, if you can find a copy of this bad boy, get it. It is fun. It's worth it. You can laugh at Mick Jagger in it. You can laugh at Emilio Estevez. And you can enjoy, of course, the amazing work by Rene Russo. All right. Next week on, of course, the show, we're going to be looking at Hard to Kill. We're going to be looking at also Above the Law and many others. Steven Seagal's good films. Films that were actually well put together. Andrew Davis's films in particular. And, of course, much, much more. All here on the Lethal Mullet Podcast. I'm your host, Adam O'Brien. We'll catch you then. And wait for, of course, Lee Feelingsness. He's going to be on that one too. We'll catch you then next week on the Lethal Mullet Podcast.
G'day, folks. Hope you're enjoying the great shows here on the Phantom Podcast Network. Be sure to check out all the great shows that we have on offer and subscribe on the master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. You can check Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast hosted by Kevin the Raider Nerd Rysel and Lee Fillingsus on their platform. You can also check out Culture Clash, which is the weekly look at pop culture hosted by Kevin and Kyle. Couch Potato Theatre, this is a cult classics and guilty pleasure podcast. Also Time Warp, a fandom flashback show. End Zone, a look at the NFL, the American football. Also Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, looking at the great films of Alfred Hitchcock. Union Federation podcast, a Star Trek and Orville podcast, looking at Discovery and, of course, Picard, plus the Orville. Also the Hair Metal podcast, looking at the great shows put on by the amazing bands back in the late 80s, their discs, their LPs, everything, all covering the fashion as well. Hosted by Kevin the Raider Nerd Rysel. You can also check out Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, hosted by Kevin and Dan Hadley, looking at all the eras of Doctor Who. You can also catch out What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast, an amazing show looking at Star Wars, hosted by Derek and Scott. And of course, our newest one, the amazing, The Mullet Guild, an offshoot of the Lethal Mullet podcast looking at Frank Herbert's Dune universe. This is like an encyclopedia for Dune, where I take you through and down into the rabbit hole of Frank Herbert's amazing space opera, the sprawling universe which is going to be brought to life by Denis Villeneuve and December 18. You can check out all the shows there. Be sure to also go onto the social platforms on Twitter at FanPod Network. Let us know what you think of the shows and what else you can look at there. You can also check out great articles that we put up through there that we share. Also check out on Instagram and Facebook, Phantom Podcast Network. Be sure to make sure that every Tuesday you check out the great work done by Making Treks as well. A brand new podcast looking at a deep dive of Star Trek, hosted by myself, James Semple, and of course, the ever popular and amazing writer of Star Trek and Star Wars, Mark Newbold. Go and check it out, folks, and we'll catch you next time here on the Phantom Podcast Network's The Lethal Mullet Podcast. Good afternoon, good evening, and good